I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people. For Tracy Fyth, fashion is his true calling. He confesses in our conversation that he feels that he was born to do this, and I tend to agree. In spite of many highs and lows and an untraditional start to his career, Tracy always finds his way back to designing beautiful things. Tracy Fyth, I'm so happy to see you in California.
I'm happy to be here.
We've known each other a long time, and I don't know exactly how long, but it's a good 15 years, I think.
Used to sell to you.
Yeah.
The store.
And love very it. Early on in my store.
Big fan.
Big fan both ways. Mm. It was always my favorite collection.
Oh, thank you.
Where are you from?
Sherman, Texas.
Sherman, Texas.
Sherman, Texas. You've never heard of it. Nobody's ever heard of Sherman, I don't think. It's about an hour north of Dallas. It's kind of a small town.
Mm-hmm. And your dad was a military man.
He was in the military. Yeah, he
Did
was.
Did y'all live on the base?
Well, I was born on an Air Force base.
Right.
Yeah, he was a pilot in World War II. Mm-hmm. It's actually some history around that because he got shot down. So I was born on an Air Force base, and then we moved away from the base and lived in Sherman, which was a town nearby. And I went to first and second grade at the Air Force base.
You have siblings?
I have a sister.
Sister.
One sister.
What's your earliest fashion memory as a child?
You know, I didn't grow up around any of this. I guess my trajectory is unexpected mm-hmm. from where I'm from. You know, because I grew up in a small town playing baseball. I wanted to be a pro baseball player when mm-hmm. I was a kid. There was, you know, in high school there were certain, you know, sectors of kids that were in different social groups, right? You know, there was the ag kids, the agriculture kids mm-hmm. who were kind of the.
That's such a Texas thing.
You know what that is.
Yeah,
I totally do. Yeah, they're
but it's so Texas.
So I guess I was sort of an independent, so I didn't have any exposure to what I would say, I don't know, real style, you know. But I hope this answers your question, is that was when I kind of got into skateboarding and punk rock, and that was. For me, an initiation into, I guess I observed you could express yourself through how you dressed.
I'm always really interested, like, how did you know about punk rock? Like, how did you know about
Well, that's interesting.
Right?
That's interesting. That's really part of my story, too, was that, you know, at that time, there was no internet, you know. And if you saw someone, like, in my town wearing Vans,
yeah.
You knew they were a skateboarder. There was like hardly any kids in my town that were into what I was into. If you saw a kid with a band t-shirt on that you liked, you would go up and talk to them.
So you took time off after high school and lived in California?
I did.
Was that like a music thing or
Well,
surf
it was
thing?
Skateboarding. Skateboarding, skateboarding right. and music. I mean, I couldn't wait to get out of Dodge. Literally, when I got out of high school, I ran away. I moved to California, and I always wanted to move to California.
Promised land.
Yeah, and it really was. I mean, historically, it is, and for me, it was too. You know, so I couldn't wait to get here. And when I got here, I just met so many people that I felt like I related to. You mm-hmm. know, that were it was just a different mentality, and it was an interesting time because 80s. Musically, you know, in the early '80s. Because the subcultures, you know, things were changing from like the kind of somewhat hippie 70s to like punk and new wave. And that was reflected in surfing, skateboarding, mm-hmm. music, style, all of that. It was a very, I guess it was seminal in my development, I guess. And I still didn't think I would be a designer. I just was.
Yeah, what did you do? What were you doing?
Well, I always wore like clothes from Goodwill and would customize them and cut them off and stick patches on them. And
so you could sew?
I mean, I taught myself little stuff. I couldn't sew. I didn't know how to sew till later, really sewing.
The home ec sewing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they don't teach anymore.
Oh, no.
Isn't that
I remember
weird?
I had home ec.
I
remember in sixth grade I made an apron or something. We had a home ec class.
We made a, I made a pineapple upside down cake.
Oh, that's nice.
But so when you got here,
you don't hear pineapple upside down
no,
cake
I don't
a
think
lot
they're very
these
tasty.
Days.
I think they're kind of gross. So what were you doing when you were here other than skating and absorbing?
I mean, I had all kinds of crazy jobs. Well, I did road construction when I first moved out here.
That's
saved
hot.
Saved a bunch of money. It was hot. That's hot. And it was hot. And I saved some money, which was my kind of plan. And then from then on, I just had night jobs, mostly working in restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I'd have days free to surf and skate. And I thought maybe I should do something with my life. And so I moved back to Texas. I started going to art school at mm-hmm. North Texas. I was taking art classes, basically. And I one of them was a sculpture class. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned earlier that I, you know, wore clothes from Goodwill and stuff, and I started incorporating like old clothes into my soft sculpture. Eventually I talked to some hapless victims into like putting some of the things on. You know, I'd sew like four pairs of boxer shorts together and like put on and make it into a dress or whatever it was. And then what happened was is that I won some award in school, and Todd Oldham was one of the judges.
Oh wow.
And Todd Oldham,
he's a Texan, isn't he?
Yes, he's from Texas too. And he was already like doing things and was somewhat known. I mean, very influential at that time were the Japanese, Issey Miyake and Yoji and Rei Kawakubo, and it was everything was kind of unisex and oversized and that, and his clothes were like that too. And what I was doing kind of, I don't know, strangely fit into
aligned
that,
with
you
that.
Know
yeah,
what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And so he, you know, asked me to work for him over the summer. You know, he showed me things. He said, here's how you do it, make a pattern. I didn't really know anything at that time. Started making patterns, and on my own just really took an interest in taking clothes apart, seeing how they were made, seeing what patterns looked like, mm-hmm. starting to sew at the factory a little
bit.
Which
is such a math brain thing.
Well, it is. Well, it can be a math thing. The way I approach it is a combination of it's mathematical and it's organic too.
Yeah.
So what it really is kind of architecture pattern making, and I love it. And it's really like therapy for me. I make most of my first patterns, and I have, you know, so I've been doing that for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I still was teaching myself to sew, and I had a girlfriend at the time that worked at, you know, a great store, Lou Lattimore, which I don't know if you know
of
it.
Yeah, I do know of it.
And she did the windows there. And I was, I was just this kind of scrappy punk kid. And so she would be doing the windows after hours. And I would go in and I'd really look at the clothes to see how they were made. And they had beautiful clothes there. You
really
know, they
beautiful.
Had everything from Chanel to you name it.
To
Gautier,
you know, Bean,
they had it all. So I worked over the summer and I said, I think I'm going to switch over and do a fashion program. Hmm. So they had two fashion programs at this school. One was through the art department, which was completely kind of experimental.
Right.
And then they had a home ec
department,
which, so I went to the art department because I thought that would be, you know, more creative. And so I started taking pattern classes and loved it. Hmm. So probably the only time I've ever made good grades in school was in pattern making and illustration classes.
And what did your Air Force father think of it at the time?
Well, you know, it's interesting because my dad, even though he was a decorated, he was a major in the Air Force, and he was kind of a high up.
Yeah.
Wasn't typical for what you'd think of a military guy was like. Hmm. He just, anything I wanted to do, he was supportive of. So I started doing that, and I went through the semester, and I was like, anybody who's in school, not to say the wrong thing, but I kind of felt like I was already had a big jump start, and I was really motivated, and I felt like I had already kind of learned more hands-on than I was probably going to learn in this school scenario. And also I already had like a kind of an anarchic sense of what I, you know, was into, and it wasn't going to be like, I was already looking at like real innovators, you know, mm-hmm. like Vivian Westwood and Jean-Paul Gaultier. And
amazing to have that laboratory though of Lou Latimer. I mean, that's
right.
That's pretty interesting.
Right. It was.
Well, and also just Texas. I think Texas women they dress.
Well, that's a big influence for
it
me
is.
Too, is that, you know, women dress there
they
and color, which is also, you know, dominant in my, and pattern. And that kind of strong woman is kind of, I think that strong sense of style and that willingness to like kind of stand out.
Well, I think that's a Southern thing. I don't think most people are okay with being noticed like that.
I know. And it's what's interesting, I think, right now is that with the social climate of things right now, I think it's that strong kind of signature and that idea of putting your femininity out there and feeling confident and strong in that, mm-hmm. as opposed to seeing it as something less mm-hmm. or less strong. I've always felt that. That's all, I think, something I find attractive in a woman that dresses that way. Also intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think that that's one of the most attractive qualities, you know, for me, and inspires me.
But I think one thing that you've always done that you have never wavered on is you want women to feel beautiful.
I do.
That's not typical. I mean, like, I don't think all designers are really.
No.
Weirdly, that's not everybody's.
Well, and I think that I don't feel like I have a lot of ego in it. I listen to women, what they want. And, mm-hmm. you know, having stores for so long. And there's certain things that are a constant, I find. And of course, it evolves what I do. But there's a certain signature of fit and. There's a language there. And
absolutely.
And it's not trendy. It's not. I always feel a little embarrassed if I do something that's kind of so this season or something. And I really try to put longevity into the clothes.
Well, I think you and Dries, I think, Van Noten are similar mm-hmm. in that way, that they're pieces I would never, ever give away or get rid of.
Yeah.
Because they're so from another planet almost.
Yeah.
Well, they're not of this season. Yeah. They're just of the next world or
yeah.
something.
Well, that's what I really try. That's a hard line to walk too.
Yeah.
And a tough road to hoe, I guess, is to be able to accomplish that. And since I've kind of started again, with this Instagram and, you know, that people kind of have access to like communicating with me, which I love, you mm-hmm. know, I have women like send me pictures of like 10 dresses in their closet and say, this is my favorite one. And yeah, I met my husband in this dress. And
isn't that so funny that the ability to be in touch with you like that? I mean, I feel like Instagram, it's so much communication for me, like all day long. It's people.
Yeah.
And it's people that I don't know and people that I do know.
Yeah.
But it's so.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too.
I feel.
And you feel like, how did we do this before?
I know. Well, that was one thing when I started Fife Club was I wanted that interconnection to cut the middle out.
Right.
And it's been really rejuvenating for me and energizing and just the stories and people. And women have handed down something to their daughters or something.
Oh, yeah. My daughter has.
Yeah.
A lot of my pieces.
Yeah. And I love that. You
that's
know,
cool.
I like the, I hope the clothes have longevity.
Well,
that's kind of.
Beauty is timeless.
Yeah, exactly. I know. There's certain things that will never go out, you know. And
so back to Texas. And so you working for Todd and then going back to school and then graduated and moved to New York.
Well, I didn't graduate. I dropped out.
Oh, yeah, right.
I dropped out. Yeah. And basically, because there were no design jobs.
Right.
In North
Texas.
In Texas that wanted anything to do with me, I didn't think. There is garment manufacturing there. It's just, you know, it's more like dresses for JCPenney and all
right.
of that. So, and really, I was very interested in knowing how to make clothes. So I dropped out of school and became a pattern maker at different companies, you know, and
in
was
New
teaching myself. No,
Texas.
This is Texas.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Still in Texas. I got a ways to go while I'm still in Texas. And I was a pattern maker at different companies. And Victor Costa, I was a pattern maker there for
That's
a while.
Awesome.
But I would go from one to the other. I would like, I didn't know very much. And I'd get a first pattern job. And after a month, they'd say, hey, you don't really, no, I don't know if you know enough. And then I'd go to the next one and I'd learn more. And I was studying myself and I was getting really good. I didn't have a sewing machine yet, but I started using the sewing machines in the factories mm-hmm. to like learn how to sew and teach myself how to sew.
And did you made pieces for yourself or for
I did. Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, no, I started making pieces for myself and then I started making skateboard shorts for my friends and started messing around with it like that. And still while I was being a pattern maker, I was with some friends. There was a group of people over at, you know, like a club or something like that. And one of the girls that was sitting there with them, I had gone to school with. Mm-hmm. She introduced me as a designer to these people. And and so they thought I was interesting, I guess. And we were talking. It was this couple. They kind of were talking about a store they were going to open, and they were going to Europe to buy like all these amazing designers. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And at the end of the night, they said, we'd love to see your collection, because she had introduced me as a designer. I'd say, well, I'd love for you to see my collection too. I'd like to see my collection. So they gave me their card and they said, well, we'll be back in town, you know, in 3 weeks and let's set up an appointment. So I called up the next day and made an appointment with them. And then I got real busy trying to make a collection, you know.
After hours?
Yes. Yeah. At the factory. I knew the security guard. He let me in. I started looking around for fabrics at jobbers. And I put together this little collection in a couple weeks of 10 styles or something like that.
And did you know, like that part you knew from Todd Oldham, like that what you would need to show or how
I sort of had like an idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know.
Because I mean.
Yeah, you make a shirt. It comes in this print and that print. Yeah. And comes in black and white, you know, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I made these pieces, which were kind of unisex at that time. There were men's. I started with men's. But it was kind of unisex, 80s, and it was kind of oversized. And I go to show them. I'm nervous as hell. They pull out a thing, and they start writing an order. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, I was like, yeah, oh, shit, right? So they write an order for like, I don't know, it was $1,000 or maybe $1,600. I can't remember. And I was like, holy crap. Now what? You know what I mean?
And then so you're when does this need to deliver?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And terms and all this stuff. They're like, are you okay with like net 30 terms? And I was like,
what does that mean?
What's net 30 terms? I don't know. So I was like, sure, yeah. So then that started like a whole other process of how am I going to get these clothes made?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And of course, no manufacturers wanted to deal with me. I needed 10 shirts and 12 pairs of that shorts and this, you know what I mean? So I talked to the seamstresses at the place where I worked, and they all, not all, but a few of them, they had like, they lived way out and they had like in, they would have like a little sewing room at home that them and their husband and maybe one of their kids helped them.
Right.
And I kind of developed this little cottage industry of sewers, and I would drive out and they sewed my clothes. You know, I delivered the clothes. They gave me a check. I bought a sewing machine. You know, it's like I was in business.
Wow.
Then I showed to Stanley Korshak the next season. And then I, you know, I just kind of went from that. And then I sold, I think, to, you know, who
Katie,
I'm talking.
Yes.
Matt. Yes.
By George. Yeah.
Sold to them. Then I was like, I should go to New York and start. And I had friends by then who had been in art school, and they had moved to New York, and they lived in the East Village, and they were painters. And I was like, I'm coming to New York. Can I sleep on your floor for a week? And I'd make a few samples. I'd have them in a garment bag, and I'd call up, hey, Barney's, can I come show you? You know, like,
oh my God.
And just started, like, knocking on doors and walking around in the rain with a garment bag and whatever it was and the snow. And
who was producing them there? So you're still your Texas
team? I'm still in Texas.
Wow.
Still in Texas. And I did that for a couple years, you know, or more. Yeah, I'd go to New York twice a year, show the clothes, deliver them, blah, 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 blah. And just I built up this little group of stores, and I was kind of like having a little business. And then Paper Magazine wrote a story about me. Stephen Gann, who started Visionaire, wrote a story about me. And that was like kind of like a big introduction to me and Paper Magazine and that kind of whole culture, which was very cool downtown New York. Finally, I got in Patricia Field's showroom.
Wow.
I started getting more accounts, and then international in Japan and all that. And I was now doing men's and women's.
Okay.
And the women's just kind of took off. It was like I couldn't do both. It was just me. I just kind of basically stopped doing the men's and started doing the women's. And then eventually, I just was like, I guess I'm going to have to move to New York. And now, this was, you know, 1990. Mm-hmm. I moved to New York in 92. And at that time, I didn't want to move to New York, but I had been doing it for years, and I felt like, geez, if I'm gonna really give this a shot, I'm gonna have to do that. And at that time, like, you know, we're talking about, there's no internet, and if you were serious as a designer in America, you were in New York, or you were just you were
absolutely
you were not serious.
Right.
You weren't taken seriously. Not like it is now, you know, like LA is seeing like a big reemergence, and which I find interesting. And that's another story because of that kind of history of like the Hollywood designers and like the designers that were out here in the 60s, well, even before 40s, 50s, 60s,
Adrian
70s.
And,
yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Galanos. So there is a history of fashion out here, but it just
manufacturing,
you know, but it's kind of gotten to where it's more, you know, it's sportswear, you know, jeans and t-shirts, which is not what I do really. But
but it's a tough business, no? Fashion.
Oh, yeah.
The hardest.
Yeah, ups and Jesus. Yeah, I've had my ups and downs.
And tell me about that.
So I moved to New York in 92, and I start doing what, you know, what you think you're supposed to do is have fashion shows. You're supposed to play that game. Well, not a store yet, but I was, you know, I was having fashion shows and all that, and I was spending all of my own money. You know, it's like basically throwing parties. You know, plus fashion shows are not. You know, this is like a big misconception that people aren't in the fashion business have is that you have fashion shows and that gives you notoriety, which turns into money and business and dollars, and that's not necessarily the case.
Right.
I was killing myself. You know, I would be up for 2 weeks at a time getting a collection ready for shows, and all of my friends living in my loft and Tribeca, camping out, helping. Mm. And after a couple of years of that, I mean, I was just at the end of it. I was just like, you know, I was invited to every single party, and everyone knew me, but I was, could barely pay my electricity bill.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And so I was going to stop. I did stop for a year or so.
And moved back home? Or?
No. I stayed in New York, and I was just doing anything to just, you know, styling a little bit. And just for giggles, I took, like, an acting class. Mm-hmm. And there's this girl in the acting class, and she's like an amazing actress, and I want to do a scene with her. We, you know, start doing this from a Sam Shepard play. I find out she had been a stylist in Italy, Italian Vogue, and Pour Louis, and Italian Condé Nast, and she was sick of the business too, and she had lived out here. She had been a celebrity stylist, and this is Susan.
Aww.
Susan Wingett, who, you know, who we eventually, but she didn't know me because she had been in Italy, and you didn't necessarily know internationally. If she had been in New York, she would have known who I was, maybe,
right.
Perhaps.
But that's how you got back into it again.
Well, yeah, we started traveling I still didn't, you know, and then we started traveling, and she was a waitress, and I was, you know, we started going to Mexico, and actually I started kind of getting re-inspired in Mexico.
Mm.
The color, the craft, women always wore dresses, mm-hmm. and Susan always wore dresses too, and it was just like, it started getting slowly inspired again. So then we come back to New York, still no money, and I'm like, well, I've still got a sewing machine. We start going around and digging through jobbers and finding vintage cool fabrics. And so I just would like make a shirt or whatever. And she would take it around to these little stores and they'd order three or four of them. And she'll say, okay, we'll get them to you this Friday for the weekend. And I'd cut them and sew them up. We'd deliver them. We'd get our $600 check, whatever it was, put it in the bank. And I remember I had like a note card over the sewing machine. It only cost us like $890 a month to live at that time. And we did that, and you know, and that's what we were doing. We started, and then the store Calypso in Calypso St. Bart was just kind of, it was the coolest store, and it just opened, and it was on Mott Street. And she started buying my clothes, you know, Christiane, and then pretty soon, like half the store was my stuff.
Yeah.
And people started calling and started picking up accounts. And then my first store, she said, we should just open a store.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a little store, and it went really well. And
I was a good client.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we opened the one down. Then we opened our own store down the street across from the children's park.
Yeah, exactly.
And we built out that store, me and like a couple friends of mine, by hand. You know, the walls were stucco, and it was very kind of inspired by the Mediterranean and Mexico and that.
It was such a great little spot.
And that store really kind of put us on the map, you know. This was in the probably when you started, you know. So 90s, you know, latter 90s. And that store really took off.
And that's when really the wholesale business really.
Yeah. And then I started doing the Raj collection, which was all the Indian stuff. And it was like, it was before this term boho, which gets, I don't know. Do people even say that anymore? It was before that, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of celebrities wearing my clothes, and you'd see Kate Moss in my slips and like Madonna. And it was,
they're so light.
Yeah. And Voyage was happening in London. And there was this whole, there was this kind of thing that was happening, at that time. It was great.
And the business went up and down. I mean, was boom and
bust. Always, you know, we were,
I do know.
Not business people. We weren't business people. We just made great clothes. Made beautiful clothes, and it was like people bought them, but we weren't, you know, there was not an infrastructure, which in this business you really need somebody watching everything,
mm-hmm.
to build things properly and to scale it, and eventually we had six stores. We had opened a store in the Hamptons, East Hampton.
That was a great location.
Then we
store.
Had one in Southampton, and then we closed East Hampton, had one in Amagansett, and then we had the Surf Lodge store. And then we had two stores out here on Melrose Place before Melrose Place wow. was a thing. And then my men's store was in a building that Sean Connery had an office above it, and Johnny Depp at the time had one. And
but then as you're saying this, all I can think of from my business mind is, oh my God, that's a lot of rent.
Oh yeah, a lot of rent, yeah. And there's a lot of money
overhead,
coming in and out,
a
and
lot of
you
employees.
Know, it's, yeah, a lot of employees, and yeah. we're not here to do it, and you know, it's it was a lively time, you know, and it was great. I was coming to Los Angeles a lot, which was my dream, you know,
yeah.
you know, to be out here at least half. Time.
Yeah. So then
we found that store before it was like before Melrose Place was really a thing.
Yeah,
it was Sally Hershberger, you
right.
know. It was before Marc Jacobs was there,
yeah.
before any of that.
Such a good little bit of it though.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful street. It's the most beautiful street in LA.
I agree.
And over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brentwood where you are is gorgeous.
And so then you took a break.
Yeah. Well, you know, then
I remember
you
moving to LA.
Yeah, you know, the economy was horrible in 2008, 2009, and
I know.
Yeah.
I'm
know,
aware.
You know. So I decided to take a break from it. Then I was hired to do it for a job out here, a creative director job at Tom's Shoes. So I
what
moved
was
out
that
here.
Like,
that was really
something?
Great. I mean, it was the most corporate.
Yeah.
I've ever been really involved in, because I always had my own business, and it was, you know, I did what I wanted. I surfed when I wanted. I, you know, came and went as long as I got my work done. So that was great. That was great exposure to a larger brand that had a different reason for existing. That was actually really good for me to have a break from fashion and to work on something that has like another reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For
yeah.
giving back. And it was great. And that company at that time, I mean, I can't speak for it now, but it was really, I mean, it authentically, you know, it gives, you know, and gives back. It's probably hard for people to imagine how they do it. But
was it hard to do things with someone else's aesthetic?
No, not at all. I found it refreshing, and actually I really enjoyed it.
You go home at night and can sleep.
That's right. I know. And it's the weekend. I should go do something and not work, you know, which is, you know, how it is when you have your own business.
So tell me about Faith Club and tell me what's happening with it.
Okay.
And we have a little collaboration
yes.
that we're doing together for Brentwood.
A year and a half ago, I was kind of trying to think of what I should do. And I was, you know, talking to recruiters, and maybe I should go design for another house or, you know, fashion direct for, you know, whoever it is, you know.
And did you feel like you were going to be able to, were you going to move to New York? If you
maybe
had to?
If yeah. I needed to, I might move back, even though I don't really want to. You know, I was really excited to get back into clothing because I missed it. And so I made a dress. And I had kind of been toying with this idea of Fight Club, like Fight Club.
Yes.
You know, and the whole idea with Fight Club was kind of that it would be sort of like an underground society. Because, you know, like if a woman, if they have a dress, they kind of don't want to tell another woman where they got the dress because they don't
right.
want them to go get the dress. It was kind of like this place where people could come get a dress, and it was like this underground thing where no one would know where they got it,
mm-hmm.
or it would be very such, you know, a limited number of things. And that's why I call it Five Club.
I love it, yeah.
First rule of Five Club, don't talk about Five Club. So that was the initial kind of idea of Five Club. And so I made a dress, I put it on there, and in a matter of like 3 hours, like eight people like ordered like this dress that was like $1,000. And I was like, why don't I just do this? You know what I mean? And that's how it started,
yeah.
you know? And then it just kind of took off.
You always keep coming back. What is it about you that this resourcefulness,
well,
this scrappiness? Where
well, what
from?
I always say is that they haven't killed me yet. So I'm still around.
And they'll try to kill you.
Oh, yeah.
Fashion
for
will
sure.
try to kill you.
You're right. I don't know. That's tough to say. You know, here's what I think it is. You know, when people are authentic at what they do, they do what they do through all the periods, whether they're super successful or they are not. I feel like I was born to do this. I can't quite put it into words, but I just love it. And I love the process of making clothes. I love to see people in them. I don't know. I love the craft of it as well as the kind of creativity that can happen. It's not always evident in everyone's clothes, obviously. But I think the best clothes are a combination of technique, proportion, and eye, and fit, and tactile quality. So I really think that is, whether it's in music or art or, you know, as a designer, it's like, it's the people who are the greats are the ones that they do it no matter what.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're born to do.
Yep.
And I guess that's my best answer for that. I don't know. I love it. I love what I do.
Do you think you want to have a store again?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think it would be enjoyable as long as I don't have to
staff
run it.
It.
You know? I mean, yeah, to staff it. I mean, that's half the job, as you know, when having a store, if not more. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in scaling Fife Club. You know, it's been pretty much direct, which I've enjoyed, is that direct consumer piece, you know, and the feedback. There's a component that's direct to consumer, and then select, I say, partners like how we're working, mm-hmm. who we understand each other, similar aesthetic, mm-hmm. and just the right people are there and appreciate it. And that's why working with, you know, with Capital and yourself is so right, because it's the right, you know, there's like a level of sophistication about dressing, and, you know, the clothes that you kind of curate and put in the store is such, it's so special. I'm doing a special group for you guys, that's only going to be for you. I'm excited about it.
People
colorful
are really excited.
Dresses and some separates too. The thing about dresses is that it's like, I see it as like such a modern way of dressing. It's like, one thing, you
fussy.
Zip it up. It's not, it's like you can, a really good dress, you can, is versatile. You can dress it up and down.
That's,
you can wear it with sneakers, you can wear it with shoes.
That's always been the best thing about your dresses.
Yes. And so that's also something I try to build into them. So I love making dresses.
I'm excited.
That's my specialty. I'm excited too.
So something we ask everybody in the podcast, what did you wear to prom?
I wore a baby blue, it was a baby blue suit.
It was notched, no.
Tonal. Yeah. Maybe there was a ruffly shirt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And did your date, did she have a great dress? Do you remember?
Yes, she had a great dress. I gave her a corsage for the wrist. And yeah, it drove my dad's Oldsmobile.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.